so basically, there's a couple different kinds of questions I want to ask you, but before we start, maybe I should just make sure that you're aware of what GiveWell is, what we're doing, and why. I don't know if you got a chance to check out our website, but I'd be more than happy to tell you about who we are and where we're coming from. So should I just give you a brief overview?
Oh, yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, I checked the webpage very briefly, but...
Yeah, no problem. So I'm happy to go through it. I mean, basically, GiveWell started with me and some other friends. We were all working in the finance industry at the time and just trying to figure out what to do with our own donations. And so, you know, we wanted to... We were each giving somewhere between $500 and $10,000 a year, and we're trying to figure out, all right, how can I get the best bang for my buck? What are some charities that I can really feel confident in and have a really kind of concrete sense that they're going to use this money to do good things and help people? And we found that, you know, there's not a lot of information out there that would help to answer this question, and there don't seem to be a lot of people working on it. And so we kind of did this as volunteers for a while, and then after doing some research and after working on it, we kind of noticed two things. One is that it was becoming, you know, a really big job and kind of felt like it needed to be full-time or it wasn't going to work at all. And two was that, you know, when we looked into the stats on who gives how much in the U.S., I mean, they're not as well broken down as we would like them to be, but it certainly appears that individuals, people without foundations, without their own research stats, give a lot of money. And you know, just to give a real brief overview, I mean, the Gates Foundation gives something like $2 billion a year after the Buffett gift, whereas when you add up individual donations to charity, they come out to over $200 billion a year. And so that's where, you know, and in the area of international aid, it's not quite that extreme, but still private philanthropy and individual donations are a very big part of the picture. And certainly up there with government aid from the U.S. and up there with money coming from the Gates Foundation. So that's why, you know, we really feel that at base there's a very important question, which is, what charity can an individual give to and feel confident in? And we feel that question is really not being examined in public and not being examined in a way that can help individual donors to do that. And so that's what we're trying to do. And basically, we're two guys who, you know, have some experience doing analysis in the finance world, but we're not international aid experts by any means. You know, we don't really have a background in it. But we've decided that international aid is a really promising area for a donor. We think you can do a lot of good if you give to the right place. And we're out there just trying to figure out what the good charities are. And one of the things we're trying to do is get people who do have a little bit more experience and a little bit more background to talk to us and listen to how we're doing our process and give us feedback. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And so maybe the easiest place for me to start is just to start by giving you an overview of what we are doing and what sort of our preliminary conclusions are in international aid and what our report's kind of going to say, and get your thoughts on that starting off. And then I do have some specific questions just about questions we've had trouble finding good literature on. So does that sound good? Okay, great. So, you know, basically what we've been doing is we did a couple things. I mean, one, we did kind of a scan of think tanks, including the Center for Global Development and Brookings and some other stuff, to try and A, just see what the major debates are in the world of international aid, and B, really try to get a sense for, you know, what are the success stories and what are the failure stories? What has worked, what's been rigorously shown to work, and what hasn't? And so, you know, after doing this for a while, a couple things that we've noticed are, one, that there doesn't seem to be as much information available as just about anyone wants. I mean, it seems like there's a near universal consensus in academia that that more measurement needs to be happening, and it's not happening, and very possibly because the incentives aren't there, because people aren't, funders are not holding organizations accountable for measurement, and so there ends up being very little information on what's gone well and what's gone poorly. Moving beyond that, the main source of success stories we found is the Million Save study by Ruth Levine at the Center for Global Development. And those stories are health stories. And the pattern we've generally seen, and I've definitely seen this discussed in the work of Professor Easterly, is that, you know, health has in many ways a strong track record. It's not that it's always worked, but there's some big cases of it working. There's a lot of things that we pretty much know are effective, you know, including kind of condom distribution and promotion, vaccines, you know, possibly insecticide-treated bed nets, some of the treatments for neglected tropical diseases. There's a lot of stuff that works, tuberculosis treatment. And then in other areas, it's much less clear that there have been major successes, and particularly in the area of sort of, you know, anything related to agricultural assistance, small and medium enterprise development, microfinance. I mean, there just isn't the evidence that this stuff has made a big contribution to people's lives, either at the micro level or at the macro level. And so one of the things that we're kind of thinking is, you know, in some ways, health is a good place for a donor to focus when you're an individual donor, because it's got a track record of working. And I'd like to pause there and just see what you think about that kind of preliminary conclusion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, like, most of the success stories that we have are definitely in health, which probably has something to do with the fact that you're really focused on one single target. So that
yep.
Results have, that those eight efforts are, like, very targeted. And secondly, I completely agree that transparency in aid giving should be front and center at this point.
And when you say that the health programs are more targeted, I mean, do you think that that makes them more likely to succeed, or simply more likely to be demonstrably successful?
I think it makes them more likely to succeed because you have a very clear bottom line what you want to achieve.
Okay. Just writing that down.
And in many cases, when it comes to health, it's also technological breakthroughs.
Yep.
So you are not, so you don't have to deal too much with, like, some more difficult, like, so the messier considerations of human interactions and human behavior up to a certain point.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I hear where you're coming from.
A lot of the successes are, for example, like new vaccines or new medications.
Yep.
So, I mean, those are essentially lab work, and, like, once you have the final product, you usually have the means to roll it out.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's good. All right. So then moving on to what we've more specifically done to identify top charities. What we did is we kind of, you know, we made a big list of charities, and that's based on, you know, going to public databases like Charity Navigator. Also, we've had a lot of charities submitted to us through our website, you know, hey, look at this. We made a big list. And then what we do is we do something actually kind of similar to what you and Professor Easterly did for the aid agencies, which is that we go to their websites and we're trying to answer certain questions. And if we can't answer them, then we kind of say, well, you know, this charity is not disclosing enough information, and we move on. And the two questions we're trying to answer are, one, you know, what do they do? And are they working on, are they kind of focused on programs that have good track records, or are they kind of not? And so we find that a lot of charities are really broad, and they kind of do things all over the place. They do some health, they do some community mobilization, they do some economic empowerment, and those are not the charities we're most excited about. And then the ones that we are more likely to investigate are the ones that have sort of, they focus on, you know, a few activities. Those activities are often in the area of health, although not always. There's some other stuff that looks good to us too. And so that's one of the questions we ask. And then the other question we ask is, you know, are these guys making monitoring and evaluation reports freely available via their website? And so it's kind of rare, but occasionally it happens. You know, the Carter Center, for example, they put all their monitoring and evaluation reports right online. And so when we see a charity, really when we see a charity that's doing either of those two things, and it's fairly rare that we'll see either, we'll flag them for further investigation. And then we go to the ones that we flag, and we really try to, you know, get as far as we can with the materials on the website, asking basically, what do they do, where do their expenses go, and then from what they do, are they, you know, sort of monitoring that this was carried out as intended, are they evaluating outcomes, and are they giving enough empirical evidence that you can have pretty high confidence, you know, even before you would go check it out on the ground. And that's kind of where we are now in the process, is we're identifying the strongest charities based on that. And a lot of charities, it's like you look at the website and you're either not sure what they do, they're very broad, or you don't see those reports and you just move on. I mean, that's kind of been our strategy. So I want to pause and, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Any thoughts?
Okay. Yeah, let me just pull this together again. So usually, I mean, one problem with charity is that an invitation they decline to make available tends to be selected.
Yep.
So even if you find evaluation reports and you find certain progress reports, it's usually difficult to know what percentage of their overall aid activity is actually.
Yep.
Then I would definitely agree that you should focus on charities that are focused either on one issue, on one single country. And I think an additional aspect would be that it's probably very difficult to observe to which degree they interact with other charities when they make their needs assessed.
Yes.
So there is a lot of anecdotal evidence out there that charities work in a certain area on a certain project or a number of projects, and you have like a number of other charities doing the same thing in parallel. And you end up with like three different boreholes backed by different charities with the same knowledge.
Yeah, I think
so
that's
the kind of stories you hear of quite frequently.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more challenging things for us to assess. And another challenging thing that I hadn't brought up is figuring out who and what is overfunded versus underfunded. Mm-hmm. That's something that we just had a lot of trouble with. I mean, one method we have is we just kind of reading the literature, we see people kind of making not really supported statements, but at least statements that, you know, ORS has kind of gone to the low-hanging fruit and it's hard to get to, you know, a lot more places, whereas, you know, bed nets, it seems like there's a ton of room to be giving out more bed nets than we are. So that that's something we've done very informally. We have a very general sense of that, and we look for any clues we can. And so, you know, we'll look to see if a charity's revenues are way in excess of its expenses or something like that. But generally, we don't have a great way of seeing, you know, where is what activities and what charities are overfunded versus underfunded. So that and the coordination thing, they're related, and it's hard for us to really tell what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And with regard to the evaluations, did you check if they are externally conducted or internally conducted?
Well,
and also, yep. If they live up to common academic standards, I mean, if they do randomization at the beginning of a project,
yep.
Or if they just move in ex post and they collect a little bit of data data.
Yeah, I think that's a totally valid point. You know, what I can say is that we do pay attention to all that stuff. Unfortunately, you know, we haven't found a charity that I would say meets the gold standard of everything we're talking about in terms of being able to provide, you know, randomized controlled trials of everything they do and externally audited. You know, we've got some that provide us with enough information that we're more confident in them than in others. And so maybe the next thing I can do is tell you who we found and then see if you know of anyone that we're missing and also what you think of these guys. So, you know, one of the groups that we're excited about is the Stop Tuberculosis Partnership. They're a global health partnership and they seem to be, you know, they're run out of the World Health Organization. They take donations through the UN Foundation, and, you know, their main activity, and it seems like where almost all of their money goes, is this this drug facility where they take donations, they buy drugs, and then they give the drugs to governments that unconditional on those governments agreeing to abide by a bunch of requirements about following the WHO-recommended strategy for tuberculosis control. Mm-hmm. And then they do have auditors of their own that go and conduct audits to see whether the countries are complying with that strategy. And one of the couple of the standout things we've seen with Stop TB is that, you know, there are examples where they gave a country bad marks and then cut off funding. I mean, that's something you don't see every day, and that's cool. And another thing is they actually are one of the only charities we've ever seen that has had an external evaluation done of them. I think it was Bridgespan that did it, but I don't remember for sure. And so that's all encouraging. There's still some gaps in there, right? I mean, they're not randomizing the rollout of the tuberculosis control strategy. So you just kind of have to hope that when they get the drugs to the governments and make sure the drugs are being used okay, that's ending up saving lives, and you know you can't know in that randomized controlled trial way. So that's mm-hmm. how it goes. So that's Stop TB. A charity we've recommended for a while is Population Services International, and you're probably familiar with them because I know they were. Well, I know Professor Eastall has written about them a lot, but they do primarily social marketing, primarily of condoms and insecticide-treated nets. And so, you know, they're trying to sell them at subsidized prices, which means hopefully getting them to the people who are most likely to use them. They do conduct follow-up surveys. The surveys are not external. They're done by PSI. And the surveys, you know, will ask people if they slept under a net last night. They'll ask them certain questions about sexual attitudes. And we think the surveys are reasonable gauges of knowledge, and then they'll publish the surveys online. They haven't conducted surveys everywhere. It's a little bit inconsistent and spotty in terms of what they have and what they don't. It also is not clear whether everything they've done is online or whether they're being selective. And also there's no randomization involved. But even all that said, I feel more confident in what they're doing than in what most charities are doing. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple that we like. Another couple we're looking at, the Against Malaria Foundation, doing bed net distribution like a lot of organizations do. And one value they add is that they make people apply to them for bed nets. And then once they get the nets, they have to report, you know, in running on when the bed nets are distributed. Once the bed nets are distributed, they have to take, you know, 40 or more photos of bed nets hanging up in houses and post them on the website. And you can see all this on the website. Again, there's concerns, you know, maybe the bed nets are falling apart a year later. Maybe people are taking them down in the summer. There's no randomization, but it's, those are three charities that I would feel more comfortable betting on than most charities. So your thoughts on that?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, as I told you in the email, I'm not primarily an expert on charities and on facilities. But, I mean, from what right. you... yeah, I mean, from what you said, I think you are focusing on the most...
Okay.
I mean, all those foundations are more or less, like, working pretty much in the same area. And what I would be a little bit concerned about when it comes to malaria and bed nets, that it might be at the moment too much of a fashion issue. So
okay.
I mean, like, once you would have like a longer track record, it would be interesting maybe if you could track how funding in different foundations or like in different charities changes over time.
Yeah.
I mean, how receptive they are to pets and fashion in aid giving.
Yeah.
To be able to put like the most special projects out there. I mean, when yeah. they're looking for funds or how consistent they are over time investing in projects.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, I think all three of these guys have been pretty consistent in what they do, although it is true that PSI is growing their bednet program, and that may be the product of fashion, like you say, so that's interesting.
Hmm. And okay. For example, I mean, you have tuberculosis covered, malaria. The biggest killer in sub-Saharan Africa is still diarrhea.
Yep.
So, I mean, none of the three charities you cited is really working on, like, the biggest single health.
Well, that's, I mean, PSI does some work on that, but it's small. I think that's, you know, it's a reasonable point, and there's a lot of health issues. I just listed three charities. You know, there's a lot of health issues that doesn't include. So, you know, another big one is vaccines. You know, we wish we could find a good vaccine organization, and we're working on it. We're looking at the Gavi Alliance. We have some concerns about them as far as whether they're holding governments accountable at all. We're looking at Village Reach, which is a smaller organization. And so we're looking at some guys who work on, and the Measles Initiative. So we're looking at some guys who work on vaccines. As far as diarrhea goes, you know, I don't really know what to say except that we haven't found a charity working on that issue that we can feel confident in. And most of the charities that focus on diarrhea seem to focus on building wells. And when you're building wells, but you're not providing thorough monitoring of like whether the well stays in operation and whether the water quality is improved and diarrhea falls, I just have trouble betting on that. And personally would rather solve a less big problem that I can have more confidence in the charity. But that's, I think it's a well-taken point. We're still looking for those. So, and another one is salt iodization. I mean, we think salt iodization is, you know, it's certainly in many ways a very attractive intervention, and yet we just can't find anyone that we have a lot of confidence in doing it. And then there's neglected tropical disease control. is something that, you know, that's not very fashionable, but we think it's very cost effective. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the Carter Center appears to do some good work in that area, but it's hard to tell how much of their expenses are going to that versus to some other things like bed nets and health worker training that we have less confidence in. So, I mean, I guess my question for you is, are there any, I know you said this is not your area, so it's no problem if not, but are there any, you know, specific charities that you think are particularly worth checking out that you would like to recommend?
Yeah, I think, one charity I know about which is interesting is, you heard about Global Giving?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much of a charity, but they try to work more as an intermediary.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they have a number of, like, very different projects in their portfolio. But what they do, they essentially try to link up donors directly with projects.
Right.
A little bit in the way Kiva does for microcredit.
Yep.
And then, I mean, you can choose a project. You can donate to that particular project. The project gets started. The necessary funds are collected. And then the person carrying out the project in the recipient country has to post progress reports on a constant basis, on a continuous basis. So I think what I like about that particular charity is that they directly try to get around this problem of, like, the broken feedback loop you have in international aid.
Yeah.
That unlike in charities that work nationally, or unlike the way government works, that you have, like, a direct connection between, like, the beneficiary, the recipient, and the donor.
Yep.
They're usually, like, very far apart. And on top of that, you might have a large number of intermediary steps in there.
Yep.
So a lot of what we call, like, principal agent problems.
Yep.
I mean, just different steps of delegation. And so Global Giving really tries to tackle those two problems head on.
Right.
And not so much focusing just on one particular area, but by just trying to provide essentially a marketplace.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, that's a pretty interesting approach.
I do think it's interesting. I agree. It's something that it's good you reminded me, because I do want to look more into it. I mean, one of the things that has concerned me on looking at Global Giving, just as a donor myself, is looking at it and saying, you know, a lot of these projects, it doesn't look like they intend to really follow up on. It doesn't look like they have really that they're very serious about sort of outcomes evaluation. And so, you know, I'm going to get my progress reports, but the progress reports are going to be very much on inputs, and especially with a lot of the more ambitious projects they're doing, you know, where it's not bed nets or tuberculosis treatment, but it might be something much more ambitious. I have trouble being confident in that, but I suppose it does depend on the project, and it is something that, you know, I should probably try funding one and see how it goes. Another thing about them, by the way, which I do worry about, is the fungibility question, where, you know, those projects are being run by larger charities usually. And so I just wonder, when you give a restricted donation to a larger charity, are you really funding more of your project, or are they really just shifting unrestricted funds then out of their project and into whatever else they're doing, so you really paid for whatever else they wanted to do? It's something I don't know the answer. I've gotten different answers from different people on that.
No, absolutely. I mean, I agree.
Okay. Okay, well, that's my general questions, and I guess I have some specific questions for you on just some things we've looked for literature on, so this would be more of a kind of yes-no series. You know, for one thing, I've enjoyed, like, Professor Easterly's writings on sort of the history of aid. This is, you know, this is what the fashion has been at each time, this is how it's gone, this is what's worked, this is what hasn't. Do you know of more sort of writings in that category that can give kind of the overview like that? Because I prefer not to be relying on one person's perspective. He's the only person I've seen really writing in a historical, empirical way about the history of aid, as opposed to sort of, you know, focusing all on the future.
I mean, you're not looking primarily for academic.
No, we are. I think academic papers are fine by us. I mean, I thought, you know, for example, Can the West Save Africa was I thought that was an academic paper, and I found it very helpful. And so more papers like that I would be. But we are looking for more review-type papers. I mean, we don't have the time to read, you know, every regression analysis of a particular series of things, but what we do, what we are really interested in is more like literature reviews and things that are, you know, academic and referenced but broad.
Okay. There is one book I read by Roger Riddle. It Really Works.
Okay.
And so the book itself is, you can skip the chapters actually on aid evaluation, because what the book does, it reviews just a lot of donor reports and, you know, like UNDP reports, World Bank reports, things like that. And what the book does, it has like a number of chapters in there that give some background on foreign aid.
Okay.
So that's nice to read. It has a chapter on NGOs.
Okay.
What you will find in there is probably kind of basic knowledge, but I think it gives like a good background to kind of get into the topic.
Okay.
And then the other chapters that actually go over the literature that tries to evaluate the overall performance of foreign aid. It's really not that exciting.
Okay. Well, yeah, that sounds like something we should check out. So thanks.
Yeah, I mean that could be different. Otherwise, I think that The Elusive Quest for Growth is probably the best book out there. And I mean, to my knowledge, it's really the only book that really tries to cover the history of foreign aid.
Okay.
So,
yes.
So there's really not too much out. I mean, the foreign aid literature is pretty restricted. I mean, it's really not such. I mean, there's really not such big literature out there, really, at an academic level. And I mean, the primarily reason is the lack of data.
Lack of data. Yeah.
You don't really have like too many. I mean, you don't have too many numbers out there you can actually work with.
I mean, one thing that it seems to me is that there's almost nothing written. I mean, there's almost nothing written on NGO aid. I mean, the papers I have seen on aid are on government aid and the structural adjustment program. There's just almost nothing on, like, you know, UNICEF, CARE. What are those guys doing? And is it working?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not a single systematic study out there on NGO aid. I mean, it just doesn't exist.
Okay.
And the reason it doesn't exist is because. I mean, if you think that the data on official aid is pretty bad, I mean, the data on official aid is pretty bad.
Oh, I agree. I know. That's exactly what we've run into. I mean, we've seen the OECD data, and, you know, you can say it's not sufficient, but there's absolutely nothing like that for NGOs.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the OECD data is the best data that's out there for social development aid.
Yeah.
And even the OECD data has some serious shortcomings.
Is that the data that was used, by the way, in that Can the West Save Africa paper? Because there are a couple charts, and the charts don't have footnotes, but they show, like, aid to Africa. And, you know, is that all from the OECD? Do you know? Do you, like, this is actually something that a colleague of Professor Easterly suggested you might know. I mean, do you, when I read the paper, Can the West Save Africa, it had all these charts of foreign aid, like, aid to Africa over time. And there were no footnotes for them. I mean, do you just happen to know if that stuff is OECD or something else?
I would assume so.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay.
But I would assume that the OECD data is probably the most reliable data out there.
Okay, great.
All data you will find on ODA, on a Office of Development Assistance, will come from the OECD.
Okay.
Do you know Publish What You Fund?
I was referred to that by someone else, but I haven't checked it out yet, so I'll...
I mean, this is something you should take a look at, and it's essentially like a campaign to increase transparency in foreign aid.
Right.
And so what they want to do, they of course want to get like some big bilateral and multilateral donors around to... report at the project level everything they do.
Yep.
In like a common and coherent format. And I mean, and once you're at that point, then the idea is that you also want to try to bring NGOs on board.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Yeah, I should have checked that out earlier, and I will be sure to check it out soon.
Yeah, I think that's pretty. And you, I mean, and they are definitely, and I'm pretty sure they might be very interested in your work too.
Okay.
So, and I think they will also be able to give you like a very good idea what are
okay.
And the kind of information you would want to find on NGOs' web pages.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I will take a look. All right. So, moving on to another couple questions that we've been having trouble finding good literature on. I mean, here's kind of a general question. There are a lot of different sort of concerns about how aid can be harmful. And, you know, that includes the concerns about raising the currency value and Dutch disease and concerns about sort of inflated salaries for NGO workers, diverting talent, interfering with the local economy. I mean, there's a lot of different ones. Generally, the literature I've seen, and, you know, most of these are papers from the Center for Global Development, are not sort of quantifying the problem to the point where you could really have a good sense of, you know, all right, so how good does an aid project have to be net good and to outweigh these potential problems? That's something I haven't seen. I have seen some demonstrations of, like, this is a real concern. I mean, none of them are, like, the most rigorous, but some of them are somewhat convincing. And so that's something that I wonder if you have thoughts on that, know of any particularly good literature on that question of sort of, you know, how harmful, how big a concern are these different concerns about aid and do they sort of outweigh the benefits and when do they and when don't they?
Well, again, it's a data problem. I don't think, I wouldn't know of any paper that really tried to estimate that. I mean, you know, anecdotally, you know that there might be very severe if you essentially poach all the available talent into the national organization.
Yep.
But to really quantify that without very good data.
How about expert opinion? Like, it seems to me that most of the aid community, most of the people who study this stuff academically think that at least the good projects are net helpful, even if they're causing some harm. So, you know, like this seems to be Professor Easterly's position and a lot of other people's position. It seems pretty rare that someone would say, you know, all aid to the developing world is bad. Although I have seen it said by Professor Shikwati, I think. Like, what's your sense of the landscape there? I mean, what's your opinion, and what do you think the landscape looks like?
Good projects are definitely worthwhile pursuing. And the problems you talked about, they become relevant in the aggregate. So
yeah.
I think at the margin, if you have a good project, I mean, the resources that are probably drawn to that particular project are far outweighed by positive impact that project can have.
Yep.
It potentially becomes a problem when you have many NGOs and many organizations working in the country, many of them in probably questionable projects.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I think at the margin, I mean, each particular project won't have a big impact.
Right, I see that. Right. And would you say, I mean, would you just say, this is just an informal question, and I know you can't back this up, but would you say that that's pretty much, you know, the common view of aid skeptics, or are, you know, is there a significant contingent of people who says, no, like, you know, you shouldn't even be funding the small projects, you should keep aid out of Africa?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know anyone who would say don't fund even small projects that.
Okay.
I mean, it's generally, and among aid skeptics, that's general view too.
What'd you say?
I mean that it only becomes a problem in the aggregate.
All right. Well, even
putting it becomes a problem when you focus on like very big schemes.
Well, what about something like when I described to you the Stop Tuberculosis Partnership? I mean, that's not small, but assuming that we're right that it's, you know, fairly well targeted and that it's being carried out as it's supposed to, that, in other words, most of that money is being used to treat people for tuberculosis. Is that something that, you know, would you look at that and say, I feel pretty confident that this outweighs whatever costs of kind of pouring the money in? I mean, it's not small.
I would need to get like a better idea on their scope. And complicated question because at the same time, those organizations, they work in a labor market. So the question is also, given that those organizations are and provide a certain labor demand, to which degree does the local population actually adjust to that?
Yep.
So it's really like a person or like an individual that's working, that's employed locally by a charity. I mean, would that person really be available for the government or for different kinds of national organizations if it was working for that charity?
Right. Well, again,
so if an NGO moves in and actually provides a labor market, like a bigger labor market for nurses, will there be more people in the local population that end up choosing nursing as a career path?
Right.
And the answer is just that we don't know. I mean, like, right. We have all these ideas that might be important in theory.
Right.
We don't have, like, a clear idea of how the labor market in the foreign aid sector in the recipient countries works.
Right. So what, I mean, what's your, do you mind just giving an educated guess on the, like, you know, Let's say that they're mostly spending the money as they're supposed to, treating people for tuberculosis. I mean, is that, to me, it seems like I would personally, knowing very little, I would guess that that's a net benefit, even though it risks some distortion of the labor market. I mean, would you agree? Would you think most people would agree?
I mean, like, I would prefer not to give one. Because,
okay.
I mean, before I could give you an educated guess, I would have to look at the numbers and really get an idea of the scope of the project and how many people are involved. And
okay.
How trained. I mean, there's a lot of elements that you can do that.
All right. Well, maybe once we have our write-up done, maybe I'll send it to you. And if you have time to tell us what you think, that'd be great.
Okay.
A couple more questions. One is on the sustainability question. I know a lot of charities have this sort of goal of creating a project that becomes self-sustaining, and that can mean different things. It can mean passing it off to the government. It can mean, you know, starting to earn its income through user fees. It can mean training local capacity so they don't need their help anymore. This is something where I would like to know more than I do about the track record of projects like that. Like, does that often happen? Does that often work? Because I know I've seen that one paper, The Illusion of Sustainability, claiming that that's, you know, largely a false hope. But that paper is not, you know, that paper is not really proving its case. It's just saying there are no cases of this. So that's something I wanted to ask you about and see, you know, am I missing something? Are there good examples of projects becoming sustainable, and where can I find sort of a review?
No, I think that projects are usually not sustainable. It's like a...
Okay. Do you know of a good review on that other than The Illusion of Sustainability, or is that what you think is the right paper?
Excuse me?
Do you know of a good sort of documentation of that idea, or do you think The Illusion of Sustainability is sort of the right paper?
I think The Illusion of Sustainability is the most...
Another thing we haven't seen much of is sort of evidence of impact for these sort of economic empowerment interventions. So that would be, you know, not only microfinance, which I think has a lot of studies and a lot of methodological problems and a lot of questions, but we've seen a lot less on programs like irrigation pumps, spectacles, cell phones. These are things that there's a lot of charities going out there and providing, and we have not seen any impact studies, either rigorous or non-rigorous, really. Don't have any sense of what they do in an area. And then, like, small and medium enterprise support, I've seen, you know, nothing on that. So do you have any idea where we might find literature reviews on those sorts of things, on, you know, on those sorts of projects, how they've worked in the past and the successes and the failures?
I know there are, like, a couple of studies on the use of cell phones more generally. There's one by Jane Aker, I think, who looked at Ghana, but overall general studies on performance of small businesses or economic empowerment.
I mean, I'm talking about a bunch of different categories, and if you know where to find reviews on any of them, that would be great. So specifically, you know, irrigation pumps, other agricultural support, spectacles, cell phones, and then small and medium enterprise support. That's like business training, funding, etc.
okay, yeah, I mean, like, the only area where I've read a couple of threads in that area would be cell phone.
Is that the Jensen paper, or is there something else?
There's one by Jane Aker.
Okay. How's that spelled?
I think she was at the CGB, and she's now at Fletcher. Or she's going to go to Fletcher. She has worked on cell phone use, I think, in Ghana.
Cell phones in Ghana. Do you mind just spelling her name for me? Just.
I'm just trying to remember. I think her last name is Aker, A-K-E-R.
Okay.
But.
I see it. Okay.
I read a paper on Earth on cell phone use. And I know there are some more studies out there about cell phones. But I don't know of any studies that look at spectacles or there should be studies for irrigation, but I'm not aware of them.
Okay, and what about for, you know, support of small and medium enterprises through training and mentoring and funding? I know there's a lot of charities that work on this, so I just don't.
I don't know of any particular foreign aid papers. I know there are a couple of papers that look at remittances, and well, they are related to.
And do you know anyone? I mean, we're not very well connected in academia at all. I mean, do you know anyone who might be able to answer that question, who might know the area?
On business formation. Right now, no. I mean, best would be to send me an email and I can look around.
Okay.
Right now, I'm not aware of any of my colleagues.
Okay. Now, another question, just switching gears a little bit. I know this Commission on Macroeconomics and Health made this argument that, that health can be causally linked to economic productivity, and they gave a bunch of, studies, some at the micro level, some at the macro. Do you know of literature on, is that kind of the consensus, or is there another side to that? Is there a paper or a review that might argue back and say, there is no strong evidence that improving health would improve economic outcomes?
No, I don't think so.
So do you?
I also think it's that kind of a moot question. I mean, like, health is usually regarded as a good thing in and of itself.
Right.
So, it's the same with education. There are, like, some papers out there that try to ascertain the effect of education on economic growth and fail to find evidence at the macro level, even though there's, like, evidence at the micro level. But, I mean, in education, as in health, the question is, to which extent is that really relevant?
Well, we are interested in that stuff because some donors, and I would include myself, do I don't have a great sense of how education is connected, especially in these other areas. So might you be able to send some of the references you're talking about, both for the case that it does help at the micro level and that it doesn't at the macro level?
At the macro level is the Lopez paper from, it's pretty old, it's more than 10 years old. It was a background paper for one of the World Development Reports.
Okay, what's it called?
All the education gun, and they look at macro data and they find and the paper essentially fails to find a connection between increases in schooling and economic growth.
Okay.
And then you have, at the micro level, you do find some evidence that people that have, like, better education usually tend to have higher wages. But there again, the big question is, which degree is that really, to which degree would those findings really aggregate up?
Yep.
Because you know that schooling or education might potentially just act as a signal On the other hand, you probably have people that are better educated, but they might end up working in more productive sectors.
Yeah.
So there's also literature out there that argues that higher education just goes to rent seeking.
Say that last part again. Cut out there.
Okay, there's also literature out there that would argue that higher levels of education would essentially result in higher levels of rent seeking. That if you don't have like the appropriate institutional and economic environment to put your higher skills into productive use, will end up putting your skills into
interesting
activity.
Interesting.
So
I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting. I mean, if I'll follow up by email, but if you could send us just some pointers to where we can find those papers, that would be great. This is not familiar to me.
Sure.
Okay, great. Here's a real quick question. The Wappenhans report, I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's a World Bank report that kind of went over some of the successes and failures, and it's kind of old. And do you have any idea where to get that? I can't find that.
Was it the Brundt report or the Pearson report?
This is a report that the paper by Easterly, Can the West Save Africa, talks about a lot. And it's I've looked it up, and I think it's actually unpublished or something, but I'm just wondering if there's any way for me to get a copy. And it's, I don't know, it's always...
I didn't understand the name, the which report was?
It's W-A-P-E-N-H-A-N-S.
W-H-E?
No, W-A-P. E-N-H-A-N-S.
I can try and look for it.
Okay. I'll put that in the... Okay, great. All right. Well, I'll put it up in the follow-up. If you're able to find it easily, that'd be great. If not, no big deal. And then I also have there were a few things that I asked someone, a colleague of Professor Easterly's, some questions about some references I saw on White Man's Burden that weren't backed up, and she said you might be the guy because you might have worked with him on that book. Is that right or is that wrong? If that's right, I'll send you these questions.
I haven't worked with him on the book, no.
Okay, so then, all right. So then you're not very good. Okay, so I won't bother you with that. All right, well, that's those are all my specific questions. I mean, I would also like to, before I do cut off this call, I would like to hear if you have any other comments for us, things we should be keeping in mind, general thoughts on the project.
Well, essentially the point that I already mentioned, I think you're right. We should totally front and center.
Yep.
Definitely, it would be great if you could get an idea, I mean, of the overall project portfolio. That would be important. That you don't, I mean, that you not just find like selected projects that are promoted by NGOs.
Yes.
But that you get at least some rudimentary information on the overall project portfolio they have.
Yeah, well,
and then from that portfolio, you could possibly get an idea how selective agencies are in promoting their success stories.
Yeah, well, we really are actually, like, arguably are going too far with that because we, you know, we really are focusing on organizations where we can see everything they do and see the reports from at least, you know, definitely more than 50%, but usually closer to 80 to 100%. And if there's an organization that has a couple great projects, but we don't know how representative they are, we're not really even pursuing that.
Hmm. Good. But, I mean, are you able usually to tell us the project you will find on their webpage? Is their entire portfolio?
I mean, most of the charities we're looking at are larger charities because we're trying to serve individual donors and find charities that we can say you can give $1,000 to these guys even if you've never seen them up close. So most of them are larger. And so usually, you know, most charities, it's like they run a whole lot of projects in a whole lot of places and you can't get a comprehensive picture from their website of what they're doing. And so at that point, when you combine that with them not putting monitoring and evaluation reports online, we just move on. We don't recommend those. And we're looking to recommend very few charities, as I told you before. And so we really look for, one of our criteria is, you know, these guys are sort of simple enough in their goals and focused enough or they're transparent enough, one of the two, that we can really see everything they're doing. So it's so the answer to your question is usually no. Usually you cannot tell everything they're doing, but we are trying to focus on the ones where you can.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
And then to also try to get an idea on to which degree charities react to that discussion. Is that really important?
Which degree they what?
They focused on like a limited number of primary objectives, and if like public attention focuses more or switches more towards, I don't know, malaria.
Yeah.
They stay focused on, well, other diseases more.
So you would prefer charities that are focused on a particular charity-specific mission and don't get pulled along by fashions, is that
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
I mean, as long as that mission remains relevant.
Great. So here's a...
I think in that regard, like, especially like a lot of the neglected tropical diseases, might be an interesting focus. I mean, I'm a public health person, but from what I've heard, there are like a lot of neglected diseases out there with, I mean, and where interventions could potentially be very cheap and very successful.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And we, you know, we found a couple organizations working on neglected tropical diseases and, you know, haven't quite been able to get one that's clear enough and transparent enough that we'd really bet on them, but we're still working on that because I agree it's a good area. So something I'd like you to consider, and this is, you know, you don't have to answer now, but it would be a huge help to us if when we're done with the report, if you would consider sort of reading it over and publicly providing your comments on, you know, the quality of the research and the recommendations. And that's something that, you know, we really... We don't get as much feedback, critical feedback, as we want on our reports, and would really value it coming from someone like you who has a little bit more of a background in these issues and has thought them through and has some credentials. So is that something you'd consider that I should follow up with you about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Let me think about it.
Okay,
When the report would be due and...
Yes. Well, I will... It's good to hear you'll consider it, and I'll follow up with you about that, and we'll see, you know, we'll kind of discuss what would be reasonable, what not, because I'm sure you're busy. At the same time, I also want to emphasize that, you know, I think this is an area that really does not get enough attention. It's even somewhat ridiculous that the two of us are the ones working on it because we don't even have a background in it, but no one else is answering this question, and there's a lot of money out there that doesn't know where to go. So I make the case that this is a really good chance to have an impact, a very leveraged impact, by being in an area that's not getting enough attention. And then I also know that you have other stuff to do. So I think I just hope that we'll stay in touch. I'll send you more questions if we have them, and then I will be following up with you about giving some sort of review of our report, and we can discuss what you would have the time to do.
Okay, absolutely. Sounds good to me.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your taking all this time. I really appreciate your thoughtful comments, and definitely looking forward to staying in touch. And I may be emailing you some more questions in the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks a lot. Likewise.
Bye.
Have a good day.